Two guys, an acre of land, and 31,000 kernels of corn. Now, that was the seed for a new documentary tracing two distantly related cousins' attempt to follow that acre of corn they planted in Iowa to learn about where our food comes from, how it actually gets into the system, and what happens along the way. What they discover in a new documentary called King Corn is agriculture subsidies are a blessing and a curse to some. The American diet has a heck of a lot of corn in it, and it's hard out there for a farmer.
We aren't growing quality. We're growing crap. Poorest quality crap the world's ever seen. We're growing it today.
You don't eat the corn that you grow?
No. I don't necessarily grow my corn for food. I don't care what's done with it. I'm selling it. It's bottom line.
Kurt Ellis co-produced and co-wrote King Corn along with Ian Cheney. It debuts this week on PBS. Kurt joined us on the phone from Oregon. Hi, Kurt.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Here in the studio is the director and producer of King Corn, Aaron Wolf. Hi, Aaron.
How's it going?
It's good. So, Kurt, let's start with you because you're far away. We'll give you the first question. You found out you have a lot of corn in you.
52%.
A lot of other people, I suspect.
Yeah.
Explain to me what I mean by that.
Well, it was kind of incredible. After we graduated from college, my best friend Ian and I had our hair tested by a scientist at the University of Virginia who reported back that I was 52% corn and he was 58% corn. He traced our carbon molecules from our cells and our hair back all the way to where they originated as food. And for both of us, more than half of what we were eating in one way or another began on a corn farm.
Now, did you consider yourself a particularly poor eater? I mean, were you a fast food junkie, or were you just somebody who probably ate like everybody else?
No, I think we were like most Americans. And, I mean, maybe most Americans are fast food junkies at this point. But we went to the donut shop off campus, and we ate plenty of hamburgers and french fries, but we weren't total junk food guys. It was just the center of our modern diet has become things like high fructose corn syrup and corn-fed beef.
So you folks decided to try to follow the corn. So you got Aaron involved. You're an independent filmmaker.
Yeah.
You made many films. So somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to make a documentary about watching corn grow. How did that work for you as a pitch, Aaron?
Well, I thought that was pretty much the most boring thing you could possibly make a film about. But it wasn't just somebody. It was my cousin Kurt, who's on the phone from Oregon right now.
We were going to full disclosure that.
And I guess I trusted that there was something going on here. You know, from a filmmaking standpoint, this idea that it was corn, I guess if he had said, well, my body is 52% rice or 52% sorghum, I don't think it would have been nearly as good a story because corn is so writ into our national mythology. It's mm-hmm. so much a part of who we think of when we think of ourselves as Americans, when we envision this mythological heartland, it's these rolling fields covered with corn. The thought that those fields could somehow be implicated in our big national nutrition crisis seemed like a compelling story.
And if we could just step away from the politics of it for a moment, it was beautiful to shoot. I can imagine magic hour in Iowa cornfield. Some of the footage in this film is just really, it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. And, you know, I think we wanted to shoot it, I mean, as reverently as possible because that reflected that national love. And even at the end of the process, you know, we slept in the corn. We had these very ambivalent feelings about what we had done because even in these industrialized conditions that characterize modern agriculture, you do develop this sense of attachment to growing something. Mm-hmm. And I think we're in this kind of national fulcrum moment where we have to think more carefully about what it is that we want to grow and what it is that we want to eat. But nothing takes away from the kind of the pride of doing it.
Kurt, Aaron brings up an interesting point. He talked about the sort of the modernization. You didn't just go out and put some corn in the ground. You talked about all the modern corn growing technology, genetically modified seeds, certain herbicides used for the specific kind of corn that you planted, that Liberty corn. Ultimately, why was there such an emphasis on corn in the current American agricultural landscape, especially this modern technology used to grow what we've all been discussing is the sort of mythological figure in American history of corn?
We really wanted to grow our 1 acre sort of example plot of corn that we were growing for the film. We wanted to grow it just the way a farmer would grow 1,000 acres of corn, or as increasingly the case, 5,000 or 7,000 acres of corn. And so we planted the genetically modified Liberty Link corn, and we sprayed it with a cocktail of herbicides, and we injected 100 pounds of gaseous anhydrous ammonia fertilizer at the beginning of the year. And we wound up with an incredible harvest. We grew 10,000 pounds of food on 1 acre of land, enough you know, corn to make the high fructose corn syrup for 57,000 sodas. And I think that abundance is kind of the key to the whole food system that we have today, which has so many problems, but also this really powerful force of there's a lot of food around. And we wanted that to be clear that, you know, that all starts on the farm. It starts with these giant agribusiness kind of operations in the Midwest.
It also started back with Nixon's agriculture secretary, Earl Butz. You actually interviewed him. He died this year, but you interviewed him when he was about 98 years old. He helped shape today's policies on industrial farming and industrial food development. What is it that you wanted to talk to Earl Butz about?
Well, you know, talking to Earl Butz was felt like quite a coup. We wanted very much, you know, I think, you know, as a filmmaker and as people who kind of listen to the narratives of news every day, we wanted to find some grand antagonist in this story. We wanted to find, like, the one bad guy who we could say, okay, aha, he's the guy that created this system.
Explain to people what he created.
Well, Earl Butz really altered the whole subsidy system. Subsidies have been around for a long time, since the 1930s, but in the early 70s, during the Nixon administration, Butz rejiggered the subsidy system so that we would now, instead of paying farmers to do things like take land out of production in order to conserve soil, we would now be encouraging all-out corn production.
Just
all-out.
Keep growing.
Keep growing, whether or not the market demanded it. And it was, you know, the belief that there was going to be this huge export market waiting. It was the belief that we were having a food crisis then that demanded it. But the effect was that we created these mountains of corn and then had to come up with all sorts of ideas of what to do with it. And one of those is high fructose corn syrup, which has found its way into thousands and thousands of things we eat. And another was making ethanol from corn, both of which I think have questionable implications for the American society now.
But when you met Mr. Butz, he kind of stood by his original intention.
He was amazing. And I think one of the things that we realized when we were in the room with them, which was a very, like, almost a kind of a chilling moment, was that you can't, of course, find a single antagonist for these kinds of things. And, you know, the whole time we had been in Iowa, we'd been haunted by these ghosts of our great-grandparents that had been the ones, you know, of Butz's generation, who had really embodied that spirit of agriculture, which was always to get more. Agriculture was always a hedge against, you know, the insecurities of a hunter-gatherer lifestyle.
A bad year, you know.
And we really have valued moreness over quality in American agriculture. And Earl Butz really embodied that. So I think when we were there in that room with him, we had this feeling that maybe there was something to learn from him. Maybe there was something to glean from somebody who graduated from college, the first student from Purdue University in their then new program of agricultural economics, in the middle of the 30s, in the middle of the time of the greatest scarcity that Americans had ever known. And you put that together with Kurt and Ian graduating from college in the middle of an obesity epidemic. And those are two very different contexts with which to regard this whole system.
Let's listen to a little bit of that interview with Earl Butz from the documentary King Corn.
This is a commercial operation. It used to be a family operation, but it's not anymore. But as a consequence, we feed ourselves very cheaply now. You'll see those tremendous fields of corn out there, corn as far as you can see.
It was Earl Butz's farm program that made our great-grandparents' dream of plenty a reality. We spend less of our income on food than any generation in history.
It was something that he was proud of. I mean, that was the point, as far as he was concerned.
Absolutely, and it's really interesting to think of in the context of today, in which we're seeing very different circumstances than when we made the film 3 years ago. Mm. You know, now we're having food prices rising everywhere. We're having riots in Haiti. We're having
food shortages.
And, you know, that is attributable to a number of factors. Fuel costs, input costs rising for farmers, a growing middle class in the developing world, mm-hmm. demanding more of these kind of developed processed foods that corn is a good base for. But also, you know, the demand for biofuels. And of those three factors, we can't control, you know, the rising fuel costs, and we can't control the rising middle class in China and India. But we can really take time to consider whether making ethanol from corn gives us the value that we need, and especially its implications for food production.
I want to bring Kurt back into this. One of the scenes in the movie is you guys are very, you're sort of in love with your cornfield a little bit, and you're sitting there, and you decide to taste some of the corn that you've grown. I want to play this clip, and then I want to challenge you about it on the other side. So sure. Let's listen.
It looks good.
It looks great.
Yeah. It's not very good, Ian.
Yeah. It's disgusting. It tastes like chalk.
I really thought it would taste better. It tastes like crap.
It's this very funny moment in the movie, but, you know, as I was Googling around, I was reading some reviews about some farmers, and some people have taken you to task for that because saying that, you know, that's not really the sweet corn that you're supposed to eat. That corn, of course, is going to taste really bad because it's been out there too long. And, you know, one farmer called your movie a little bit of propaganda and said, you know, you really don't understand what's going on with us farmers. So I'm wondering, did you come to this movie with a predisposition towards corn, kind of the way, you know, Morgan Spurlock made his movies, or Michael Moore approached his mm-hmm. film? Or what do you have to say about the farmers who are saying, you know what, this isn't the way it really is?
I should say first, it's very, very few farmers who have had that reaction. We've shown the film a whole lot in the Midwest and had a great response to it there. Mm-hmm. I think in large part because farmers have lost something too in the last generation. The number of family farmers left out there is tiny. There are, you know, more prisoners in the U.S. than there are farmers at this point. So if you're still surviving in that system, then you've gone through a whole lot in the last generation. And I think, you know, if part of their concern when they have them is, you know, could we have spent even more time talking about the challenges of this economy for a farmer? But for those who do take issue with the film, you know, it's we came to the story honestly, which is, from, of course, we have a perspective. We grew up on the coast and knew nothing about corn production. Mm. I mean, when we first drove through Iowa on a cross-country trip in college, I had no idea that all of those fields were not sweet corn. I had no idea that you couldn't go out and eat that right off the cob.
So you got a little bit of an education yourself.
Yeah, and the...
Aaron's eyes just went up, eyebrows went up. Why did that happen, Aaron?
Because Kurt made that funny squeaky sound, and he's my cousin, so I'm allowed to make fun.
Oh.
the from our perspective, our food system is in a heap of trouble right now. I mean, when Ian and I got out of college, we were told that our generation might be the first one to have a shorter life expectancy than our parents' generation because of the way we eat.
Aaron, do you think you made a... I'm sorry, we're running out of time. I want to get Aaron just to have a last question. You think you made a fair film?
I do. I do, very much. And I think it was really my intention to not make a film in that Morgan mm-hmm. Spurlock, Michael Moore vein. And, you know, this film has been criticized from the other side as well, who expected there to be more anti-corporate messages in the film.
Well, we can let people watch and decide for themselves. I enjoyed it very much. It's called King Corn. It debuts this week on PBS. Aaron Wolf and Kurt Ellis, thanks for being with us here at NPR.
Thank you so much.
That does it for this hour of the BPP. Join us next time. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Allison Stewart. We're online all the time, npr.org/Bryant Park.